everybody, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. We're recording right now at the Little Ranch House Studio in Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. Show number 155, April 18th, 2006. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed, of course, with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts, ladies and gentlemen, for the Blind Handyman, Don Shaw.
Hey there, Mr. Tom Houston. What's happening
this morning? Not a whole lot. Don Patterson, hi.
Hi, Thomas. I've been searching for our auxiliary power in case the electricity should go out next time there.
The rolling blackout.
My name's Tom Houston, but here he is, guys. Here's the guy that created this thing. He's the one that thought it up, Phil Parr.
Well, the rolling blackouts in April in Texas. It's 93 degrees right now on the porch of the studio at the Little Ranch House on Southwood Drive. That is too hot for April.
That is. That's just too damn
hot. Well, I
hot.
Heard that Houston and surrounding area, I don't know if that includes us, is already 6 inches behind in rain. Mm. And so they keep saying the drought is over. I don't think so.
No,
so
I don't think
you're
so.
Saying you saw last night on the news, Joe, where we had that this was record temperature.
Yesterday was a record-breaking temperature day.
Man.
Around 92.3 degrees
well,
yesterday.
Well, I think they predicted 101 for Dallas today. I don't know that it made
they
it.
Did.
Yeah. And,
really? So that does not bode good for the summer.
Global warming
is here.
I'm a believer.
Yeah, they say it's no longer controversial or political. It's just a fact. I mean, the polar ice caps are melting at an alarming rate, and it's just global warming is certainly here in Lufkin.
Yeah, Lufkin it is. Warming. Definitely here in Lufkin.
That's amazing. Anyway, it's hot as it can be. Let's see, I talked to Rossi this morning. He said it was 85 there in Pittsburgh.
Oh, man. Great weather.
85, I think he said, in Pittsburgh. He's going to help me out tomorrow. We call on Dan. Dan is our guest. If we don't have anybody as a guest, we just call Dan. Because he got something to always...
Always got something to talk
always
about.
Always something to talk about.
Yeah.
He's just our bud. We love him. Anyway, what else is going on? Patterson, tell us about this zoo-quality spider you rescued from your pool yesterday.
Well, the grandkids went swimming, and I can't remember if it was last, like, Thursday or last Friday, you know. And, I mean, before the little heat wave set in, we had still been having some nice weather. Anyway, and the mom was kind of sunbathing there, and she said, told one of the twins, y'all get that frog out of the pool. Now, keep in mind, she has 20/20 vision, you know. And so one of the girls said, well, that's dead. She said, well, shoo, you know, get it out anyway. And then the little girl said, but it's not a frog, it's a spider. So you can imagine how big that spider is. If the sighted person
if it looked like
a frog. And so I fished it out with the net, but it was still alive. And so I'm thinking the body of that spider, just the body, was at least 50-cent piece size.
Wow.
I mean, and he was still alive. He was kind of moving kind of slow. I had seen him in there the day before, but I thought it was just a clump of grass. So I mercifully put him out of his misery. And I'm thinking tarantula, I guess. You know, and I don't think I've ever seen one in the wild.
Zoo quality spider.
Yeah, they would have probably been glad to get him.
You know, Tanya, our friend Tanya, got a spider bitten several years ago. A big hole in her leg.
Oh, it can be bad news.
That can be. And he's not very big. But that's he lives in the house, and you find him in your clothes. And, you know, he's
a little tiny spider.
He's not real big at all and can do you misery.
You folks love the summer. The skeeters are out. Man, I went out for 30 seconds yesterday. Talked to the pool guy, feed the dogs, went back in, and legs just skeeter bit, you know.
Wow.
They're already here. The summer.
Man, everything's getting an early start.
Everything is. Just, you know, what is the deal? We have this kind of stuff in the middle of May.
April should be.
Conley's come down at the last of April, and we usually get one cool night. Remember that he slept out by the front porch?
And
the guy drove by and saw him on his cot out there and scared to Halloween. It wasn't Halloween. I don't know what they were. They were wrapping houses or something.
Yeah.
And he came by, and there was Conley with his feet sticking out of the
tent door.
Anyway, it's hot. It's too hot to be doing anything. Air conditioner's going, running up my electric bill. It just kind of goes around and around and around. It looks like a 45 record.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
All right, Tommy. What do you have for us?
Hi, all. Yesterday, I took down an evergreen tree in my front yard. I now have a 9 to 10-inch stump that is just about level with the ground. I'd like to get it 3 or 4 inches below the ground. so I can bury it and let it rot. Anyone got any ideas of the best way to do this? I've considered taking a large spade bit and putting as many holes in the stump as possible, filling the holes with a charcoal lighter fluid and letting it burn, then removing as much of the ashes as possible, and repeating the process until I got it below ground level. Any advice is appreciated.
You could do that a lot, but that's going to take a long... Depending on what kind of wood it is, that's going to take a long time to do.
I'm lazy. I'd get a stump grinder.
I'd call the stump grinder. Probably for $75, he'd come out and give you... It would be below ground, and you just have a big pile of sawdust there.
Yep.
That'd be all there is to it. You know.
If you were bent on trying it yourself, of course, to keep in mind for the week or so, it's going to be green if you just cut it down. I think those evergreens are pretty sappy. But anyway, if you knew someone or wanted to invest in some wood, some wedges, like you were splitting and just kind of... drive a wedge down into it one way and then turn it, you know, 90 degrees and drive it down there again, you might break it off down enough to bury it.
I guess if you had the strength to sit down there, you'd have to get down low to do it, really. And if you're blind, you don't want to swing a sledgehammer over your head. I never did. I usually got it by the handle and shortened it kind of down, made a short sledgehammer. In fact, I had several at one time. I had a lot of stuff, wood splitting stuff gone. And my brother-in-law swears he doesn't have it, but that yours, you know him. It couldn't. I don't know what happened. The yard guys got it, or somebody got it. It was on the front porch behind the swing, and it was just out in the open.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say you want to watch those wedges, though, because who was it? Somebody on the list just here recently it was talking about that they were using a hammer and a wedge, and the wedge bounced back and hit them upside in on the forehead.
Well, that can happen.
But it hurt like hell.
But you want to tap that wedge down in before you start slinging at it, before you start swinging hard at it. You want to do a little tapping. Speaking of stuff hitting people in the head, Don, what'd you have? Patterson was lathing his trusses that he put up. We've told you about those. And you had your nail gun up, or what happened?
I had my nail gun up there, you know, so, and keep in mind, this is 9 feet off the deck, and so I came down the ladder to do something, and I stepped on the hose and jerked the nail gun down and hit me right in the head. I'm still alive and well, but I want you to know.
Yeah, that could have been a disaster.
I saw several kinds of stars.
I bet you did.
I guess the thing to do would be take a C-clamp and clamp that hose up there to the ladder.
Yeah,
up high,
and then
so
to where you could have some hose. I had it running the wrong. I should have run it in at the end of the building down by the gable and let it just trail along all across the top. But I had it tangled up in the trusses. I would move over two spaces over and just keep pulling the nail gun. And so I got it tangled up. And then, like I say, I stepped on the hose.
Yeah, that
pulled
it off.
Pulled it down on
man,
the
that
pulled it off on your head. Well, you know, I'd call somebody. You could sit there and do it. I had a lot of short sledgehammers at one time. Like for kids, the handle would be like 18 inches long instead of the big long ones.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, you'd be hard pressed a blind person to put that thing back over your shoulder and come down and hit that wedge.
So you're telling me now you don't have any wedges here? Because I was thinking about borrowing a wedge one day. And
I think I have one and one hammer.
One would do.
What are you going to do?
I've got some, you know, pecan wood makes good barbecue smoking wood. And I acquired some pecan limbs this weekend. Pretty good size, though. And they're just big enough to wedge. And I need a wedge and split them and quarter them down into smaller pieces. I got to think about that project a little bit. But
it'd be good for smoking.
It would. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Great for the barbecue pit.
Did somebody answer that question, Tommy?
No. They may have, but I didn't.
I think there were several answers. One guy, you know, most people, the consensus was get a guy to come and grind it. I think you could probably rent a little grinder.
And back on this, too, there is, if you wanted to dig down a little bit and forget trying to get it below ground, they make some chemical that you could put on that'll help it rot quicker.
Yeah, that I think accesses the rotting process. I think that may have been on the list, some that you can put on there. But if you want to get rid of it now, call a stump grinder guy. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay. I added a 20 by 20 sunroom to the back of my house. Now I have a question for you guys. The outside of the room is wood, and I don't want a weed eater to eat the wood when my yard worker is doing my yard. I'm thinking about using Roundup to kill the weeds around the perimeter of the room.
Yeah.
Then installing a plastic sort of border surrounding the outside of the walls. This plastic border looks like brick and is fairly durable. My question is, Did I have to worry about mildew or something growing between the wall and the installed border? And if this is a problem, how do I deal with it? Any suggestions are available. And this is from Kevin Doucette.
Well, goodness, I wondered if Kevin's got his wood all the way on the ground, and he's going to have mildew, whether he has a border or not, if that wood, if his siding
if it's touching the
ground.
Yeah, but he's not going to have any mildew or anything behind it with as much sun as he's going to get, you think?
No, I mean, he'll get some kind of rot or something from the moisture if the ground gets wet.
If it's touching the ground.
If I were going to, I mean, I don't know what his area is, but I'll tell you, you could also put down like a treated landscape thing and spike them in there, and then your weed eater wouldn't be getting your house. It would be getting the landscape.
That's right. Make a border for it. Yeah.
You could do that, or I'd put a flower bed around it, you know, get to some blocks from Lowe's and kill all the everything around it and put some pine bark mulch down and build you a nice little flower bed all around, because you want something to grow there anyway. Your wife will, if you had a wife. I think you ran her off, I think.
Well, maybe this is his new dwelling. Maybe he's expecting another.
Think he has a new wife? Maybe he's commandeered someone else into marrying? Nah, our boy Kev. We love him. I'd put a flower bed around it, if you kill everything and then put a flower bed, then nothing will grow, right? Unless you put down some pine bark mulch or whatever
they also make, you know, out of these recycled tires, some kind of rubber border type stuff that you can buy Lowe's and Home Depot. But I'm telling you, it's a high price. I mean, it's fairly expensive.
It's going to be high price, and I don't know. Your yard guys are. I just tell him to watch it.
To be really careful.
Or we'll just have to kill you. Get another yard guy. Send it to Phil's and he could steal my wood splitting stuff.
Yeah.
Here's a girl that says my Kenmore, which I know is really a Whirlpool dishwasher, has decided not to work.
Yeah. I saw this.
The light on the display comes on, but when I press start, nothing happens. I have turned it off by the breaker, hoping to restart it.
Yep.
Nothing works. I can't find the owner's manual online either. The dishwasher is about 10 years old, and the repairman is coming next Monday for a different problem. Figures, doesn't it? Anything I can do between now and then, I hate washing dishes by hand.
Boy, don't we all?
We sure do.
I hate this new dishwasher I've got.
Really?
I just don't like it. It doesn't do... I don't know what its deal is. That's going to turn your mic up a little, Tony.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you weren't quite loud enough. Are you up on it pretty good?
I wasn't at the time.
Yeah,
no.
I couldn't hear. Anyway, down in the bottom of the middle of my Whirlpool dishwasher that I had and loved that wore out is the place where the water comes out, and there's also this thing down there that spins when the water comes out.
Yeah.
Take that off and clean that little down in there where the water comes out. Put it back on and see if the dishwasher will run. That happened to me. I mean, it would run, but no water would come. So I don't know if that's her problem at all. If the motor's not running, she's lost the motor. I mean, if she can't, you know, if the motor won't come on, then you probably got water down in the motor, and it's new dishwasher time. I can't get this new one. When you start the knob around, the knob is so jumpy, it seems like it goes too far or something. I just don't like it. I'll have to get used to it. I'm going to have to put a mark, because the other day I ran in, it ran about 15 minutes. I had it on warm rinse or something. I cannot get used to it. I guess I'll have to, because I got it. It's installed, and I got 15 years of it, so I might as well,
better get used to it.
I better figure out something.
How long, let me ask you this, long does it take your washer to run through a cycle?
My dishwasher?
From beginning to end.
Man, the Whirlpool took about 2.5 hours. Took forever.
This one we've got now takes a long time. It's a Kenmore, and it takes forever.
Mine seems to take about an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine about an hour and a half. We turn it on right when we go to bed, and it seems like it thrashes around.
This new one doesn't seem to take as long. I just don't like it. It's a lot quieter than that old. That old Whirlpool was noisy, but, you knew it was doing something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You knew that you were accomplishing something when it ran. This new one just kind of hums along and says, I'd like to wash your dishes, Mr. Parr, but, we discovered one thing. There's a whole lot of, you can buy a $300 dishwasher or you can buy an $800 dishwasher. And I wondered what the difference was. I think I know now.
About $500.
About $500.
Yeah.
All right, you got one more, Tommy?
It's too long.
too long.
It's too long to get it before our guest time. Yes, sir.
Save it for next week, huh?
I'll just read it next week.
Yeah. We're doing homemaking tips today, since we're talking about dishwashers.
Yeah.
Homemaker ideas with our own Susie, homemaker.
Right.
Susie Barnes, and she'll be up in just a minute. Hang on, more of the Blind Handyman Show. Be right back.
Yeah.
Of the Blind Handyman Show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, and so we formed this Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as blind like me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, I want a nice house and kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me Show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love. Do you know about the Blind Handyman List, sir?
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman List, great place. Exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I have found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the handyman list, and it works.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman list, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman list, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. A trip to Walmart.
I wonder where the pharmacy is. It's somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my cane caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your cane is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping the big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at blindmysmart.com?
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is blindmysmart.com. Again, that's www.blindmysmart.com.
I guess you don't live there anymore. It's years since you've been there. And now you've disappeared somewhere. Like out of space. You found some better place, and I miss you. Yeah.
Well, we had a little trouble locating our guest. I don't know what the know exactly what the deal is, but why don't we this long email that you have? Why don't we take that? Have you start your clock, your timer again?
Yeah, I'm looking at my watch.
You got your timer. You know where we are, huh?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, I worry too much. Well, why don't we just do this long email, and then we'll try her. Give her again, just kind of an on the air. What do you think?
On the air phone call.
Okay. Here we go. It says right. Morning. Okay, here's what I'm trying to do. At home, I have good old regular central heat and air.
Uh-huh.
The back room of my house has this big old window in it. It's like a sideways rectangle, and it's the only window in the room that isn't a storm window, or any only window in the house that isn't a storm window.
Uh-huh.
The vent is there. The vent in there is right behind the door, and the room is kind of funny shaped, similar to a kind of L shape. Now, the vent, as I said, is behind the door, at the top of the L. Also, this room was added on some time ago, and it just never cooled off very well.
Yeah.
And this room is added on to another room, which is my second bedroom. Most of those rooms don't cool off all that great, but the bedrooms cools a little bit better. Sorry, I didn't mean to confuse you all. I'm thinking about getting a window unit to the add-on room. The window in there faces the door, which leads to the second bedroom. I was thinking that with a room that small, a window unit would cool it off nicely and possibly help the cooling of the bedroom, thereby helping with the cooling of the house. Am I way off in left field, or is this, or do you think this would work out right?
Well, first of all, this room that was added, I wonder how much insulation is there, if any, in the attic?
That's what I was thinking
because
about.
That's the deal. If you don't insulate a room these days, you can't cool them if you don't insulate them. If you, you know, they're, what they want is your room to be just like, you know, they, like, I remember the house in Houston, when you opened the door coming out of the garage into the kitchen, which is the door we used, the house, that house was so tight, it jerked the door going into the attic out of my bedroom up there. I knew when somebody, you know, it was, and I was upstairs.
Yeah,
that house was that tight,
and that's good,
and that's what
that's
you want
thing.
Is that those moisture barriers, and you want the house that tight, and you want insulation. First, the first thing I would try is reducing the amount of air. Figure out where the air conditioner is, where the return air is, and that's where the plenum is. That's where the air is being distributed from. I would reduce the air going into the rooms close to that plenum, and see if you couldn't make more air go into those back rooms. If that doesn't work, buy a window unit.
Yeah, I know.
What do you think, Shawboy?
That, and then, buy a window unit. I agree with the insulation problem. I bet you, though, just from hearing it, with the way that room and the window and all, I bet you it could be an insulation problem.
But I was a little confused about that. This, the vent that he's talking about in this room is behind the door. I wonder if he means this vent's coming out of a wall as opposed to an
That's what I would
ceiling.
Think.
Ceiling. And you know, you just may, overall, when they added the room, they may just not have enough unit to cool, you know, that extra square foot may have just over.
Well, it's like Don Shaw's playroom. You never can get that playroom as cool as you can the rest of the house. Have you noticed that?
Well, but now we have, because when we, the first, you know, the first winter we moved in there, we had the little fire problem, you know, and after that we bought a new furnace and the air conditioning unit, and we bought like 1 ton bigger,
and
that solved that problem.
It'll do it now.
Yeah, everything stays really even.
But usually that thing ran from noon till 10 o'clock at night, and the playroom never would get, because the sun, you catch that sun, afternoon sun, right on the front of that room.
Yeah, that's
that
the
playroom there.
Yeah.
And it just creates a problem. But I would try reducing the air in the rooms closest to the air conditioner, closest to where the return air. And you might have the guy put you a return air in that room, which might, you know, might help some. Run a return air. I know that we did that in Luann's little loft up there, and it helped. It didn't solve the problem, but it did help some. Reduce the air closest to where the return air is, or where the plenum is, where the actual air conditioner is, and see if you can't force more air into that. That back room,
or more air into it,
or
room.
You may,
larger vent pipe.
Larger vent pipe going into that room. There's several things you can do, but
even the location of your thermostat. You know, you may to get cooler in there, just have to run the temperature, like Phil says, I would consider, because no doubt your thermostat probably in the part of the house that wasn't added on to
it.
Oh,
yeah, it is.
And so that makes it even further. And
yep.
So the main air conditioner is going to tell, I mean, the thermostat's going to say, okay, it's cool over here. And so I think reducing the air closest and maybe getting more back there might help.
Yeah.
Tom, you didn't latch the phone.
It sure couldn't hurt it.
No, sir.
Hello? Are you there? Pot her up.
What it is?
Is she there? Boy.
Do what now?
Is she there?
You're there,
yes.
Aren't you?
Hi, Susie.
Hi. How are you, Tom?
I am doing just fine.
Wonderful.
Your voice sounds so sweet.
Well, thank you. Don't tell anybody
I'm different. Yeah, you probably need to bring the trim up a little bit. She's a little bit low. Anyway, what did you do? You saw where we'd called you two or three times, and so you called us, right?
Well, I just walked in the door, and I checked my voicemail, and I saw that there was a call.
Yeah,
and it was us.
That's right.
Little of us. Well, we decided to come back and do. We had one more little email to read, so we did that, and we were fixing to call you. We should just call you on the air, just like a live, or like a real radio show.
That's right.
Absolutely amazing.
So I just called in, so since I was the first caller, do I get a prize?
Yeah, but we'd rather not mention what it is here on the air, because we might all get in trouble. This is a family show. So you work today. You've gone back to work a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Back at your old place of business.
That's right. But I work and I don't have the headaches.
But the problems that they have aren't yours. You don't care.
They're not mine. Mm-mm.
Well, all right. And we want to talk today about what? Hell, I don't know.
Well, I think we're going to talk about clothes.
Okay.
The fact of putting them together, knowing what color they are, knowing what goes with what.
Uh-huh.
So let's talk about that.
All right, because that's a subject I know nothing about. You've got four guys here who know nothing about any of that.
Well, you all can put on any color shirt with a pair of jeans or a pair of khakis, and you're ready to go.
We don't care.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
But sometimes the women care,
yeah.
And you want them to, well, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
But this is ways that they can, if they send you off, and you don't know what's supposed to go with what, they can even match it up for you, and this is how they can do it.
Okay.
So this is a unisex-type way to match up your clothes.
Okay.
If you can't tell colors.
All right.
Really, a lot of times, you can tell what something is. Of course, you've been told what color it is initially.
Mm-hmm.
And you can recognize that by the texture of the fabric or how it's made or the collar or whatever that's
mm-hmm.
on it. Just the style of the garment, you can tell. But one way to work out a simple system for this is safety pins. Those little brass safety pins,
mm-hmm.
buy a whole container of them. You can get them at Walmart or most anywhere. But they're small, and the reason you want them small is because they usually won't show through the garment. You can put them on the tag in the back of the shirt or the blouse or in a waistband or whatever.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, gosh, that probably was 30 years ago, they came out with kids' clothes that were called Granimals. And the Granimals, you matched up the clothes, so the tigers matched the tigers and the elephants matched the elephants.
Uh-huh.
And whatever. Well, here, okay, for example, I'd use, for example, black. Let's pick another color.
Okay, all right.
Light blue. Okay, if you had a light blue shirt, you might put that, I want to go back to black because that's what I use.
Okay.
But put one small safety pin. Now this is a quick fix. I've got something that works even better.
In the black shirt.
In the black shirt.
Yeah.
Put it in the tag in the back of the black shirt. And then in the pants you can put the same type safety pin. You can even put that in the back. You could, in the back part of the waistband.
Mm-hmm.
That part, position and position, match each other. You get it?
So, the, rather than putting more safety pins, the blue ones would be on the right side of the shirt and the right side of the pants, and the green ones would be on the left side and the left side. So, you'd do it by position instead of amount.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'd put three safety pins for green, two for black, and one for, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking you would
19 for olive drab.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of stuff.
Well, see, you can get into multiples, though, because
yeah.
if you have more than three type colors, then you can do the multiples to this place, to that place, and to the other place.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if, when you get into multiples, you may get up to seven, you know, for the thing. But particularly if you're going, if you have a particular shirt that goes with a particular pair of pants, then that's where the positioning is important. Because if you find, for example, you may not be wearing a blue shirt with a blue, you may not be wearing a green shirt with a green pair of pants,
mm-hmm.
necessarily. I mean, solid green.
Yeah.
It's just that this particular shirt goes with this particular pants, and the positioning of them, of that pin in that shirt goes along with the positioning of that pin in your slack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, this system works really well if you're, even if you've bought something, because you can carry these little pins in your pocket. And I have done this a few times, not often, but I have done it. Is to go ahead and put those pins in it when I'm walking out the store, because if I find something that I really like and fits well, I might buy it in two different colors.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to get home and
yeah, not know which one is what,
and not be able to wear it until somebody sighted comes along and tells you
what.
So you put them in as you're leaving the store. That's good.
No, I stood at the store and I said, wait a minute, I've got to do this before I leave so I'll know which is what.
Yeah.
So that's the safety pin route. That also can be done, and I have done that for someone who was going on a trip and they were taking suits
mm-hmm.
and ties, and they always wore a white dress shirt, but the tie... Actually, they had really good ties, so we could fold those up and put them in the breast pocket.
Yeah.
And then, because the fabric of the suits were so similar, then I did the pin in the right side and, you know, the left side, and same with the pants. So they always got the right thing put together.
So, did you do this for your kids when they were little? I mean, put their on their garanimals.
Oh no, they could see. They could see theirs.
You just asked them.
Tell me what. I said, well, what is this one? Oh, that's an elephant. And I said, well, let's get the elephants together. And so they did. Oddly enough, I'll digress a little bit with the color thing. I would asked my daughter, this was after she was about 4 or 5, and I said, well, Dawn, what color is this? And she loved the color, and she had ranked to getting I think she had a 64 count box of crayons, or maybe it was 48. She'd dash off to that crayon box and pull out something that was the color, and 5, she knew her letters, and she would spell the color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I learned lots of new colors that way.
Yeah, but, I didn't know there were 48 colors.
Right.
You know.
Another system that, now this is not as quick, but it's also for someone who, you don't have to have Braille, you don't have to have any fancy-dancy system.
Yeah.
You know, is buttons. And baby buttons are wonderful for marking clothes. You know, the small buttons.
And permanent.
Right.
Yeah, much more permanent than the safety pins.
Yeah,
so
sure.
The safety pins is a fast click, is a fast stick.
Yeah.
You know, buttons, and there you can get into multiples, and you can arrange them. And for that matter, if you really wanted to get really into it, I think that's overdoing it, but you could arrange them like a Braille letter. But with buttons...
Yeah, that'd be a little...
Baby buttons, you can put them in the same place, but just match them... okay, if you have a flat, the same type button, you can put it in the tag in the back of the shirt to go along with the back of the skirt or pants. Now, that's where I get into the black thing. I've got a lot of things that are... black. If you got black jacket, black pants, I'm sure you don't want to tell about your skirt, but I put one single button in the back of everything that's black.
Yeah.
And that makes it, you know, that makes it easy. Then if I'm doing navy blue, I'll use a different shape type button. Well, like a shank bag button, and put that kind in everything that's navy. And for a man, if you're or a woman, like a zip your pants, that little piece, you know how they snap or hook, that little end fabric that's before the eye of the hook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great place to put your button. Are your little tag right there, because it touches no skin, but it still doesn't show.
Yeah. Can you sew buttons on things?
Sure.
You know how to do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can put simple hems in. I'm not a great hemmer. Well, I'm a good hemmer. I'm just not a good cutter.
How do you thread your needle?
How do you thread a needle?
Well, I use these little wire loop needle threaders. But I have recently found something that is even better, and this is a handyman idea. You know the picture hanging wire?
Yeah.
You know how it's twisted, actually? It's got many, many little wires in it?
Yeah, it's stranded. It's called stranded wire.
Okay. If you untwist that and you pull one of those out,
mm-hmm.
You can put that into a needle and make your own loop and pull that thread through, and then you don't have that wire loop falling off that little thing. Wire loop needle threaders live a short life at my house.
You untwist wire that you would hang speakers. You buy a little kit to hang speakers with, and you untwist that wire.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have enough of it to last a lifetime.
That's right.
And use that very thin wire. And it's you can. The only bad thing about that is you can stick that in the end of your finger and hurt yourself.
Well, you can.
With that wire. I've done it. It's like piano wire almost.
But
yeah.
You can be careful.
Yes, you can be careful. And so you make a little loop and pull the thread through with that.
You know, I have found what's easier than making a loop out of it is just bring it through your needle, and then maybe stick your finger in the end and then loop it back over your finger and back through the eye. That's easier than putting, you know, making a loop and pushing it through. Plus, you don't have to open up that loop, because those little loops sometimes get real mashed.
Yeah.
It's hard as heck getting that opened up. And then you just stick your thread through that loop and then pull it back through your needle, and presto, you're done.
Whereas a sighted person can just drop that thread through that eye.
Yeah, they sit on it and, you know, stick it through and that kind of
thing. Do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So you could sew a hem, but you can't, you have trouble cutting, I suppose. I guess you would, wouldn't you?
I just fold it up is what I do.
Yeah?
Yeah. But no,
And cut along the folded edge?
No, I'm not a good cutter. That original hem is still left in there unless I take that hem out and bring it up some.
But you can, if your kids bought something that didn't fit, you could re-hem it for them.
Yeah, only my daughter sews, so she can do it on the sewing machine.
But if you had to do it, you could.
Well, now she
can. But I do my pants. My pants legs are usually too long, so I can hem my pants.
You hem your own.
Fold it on the inside and use duct tape. Works great.
Yeah.
I like to hem it. And my mom was a wonderful seamstress, and she used to say, you actually are a... said, I can't ever see your stitches where you've hemmed. And that's a real compliment when it comes to hemming.
Well, yeah.
Not seeing the stitches. But anyhow, that's the buttons and the pins are two simple ways of marking things. Of course, there's the little metal braille tags that you can get. I think they still make them. Used to. The Telephone Pioneers put those out, and they were free. But nothing's free anymore.
No, you're right. Nothing.
And there's Teflon tape that looks like Dymo tape, but you put it through the... you braille it just like you would Dymo tape, either putting them through the slots of... braille slate, or if you've got one of those things for your brailer.
Want it through your label maker?
It won't run through the label maker. It's too heavy.
It's too heavy? And then it has a sticky back or what?
No. It doesn't have a sticky back. You just, because it's the Teflon stuff, you can actually pierce it with a needle and just make the little labels. I've used it. I have not been particularly successful with that.
Now, what would you do? Sew it inside?
Yeah.
Well, that'd work, and that'd be permanent. It'd be there forever.
It would.
No,
it'd be there forever.
I mean, you know, of course, the button.
And the good part about that now is because on those little metal labeling tapes, you just have to kind of... There's not a lot of choices. And with this, you could just make it whatever color you needed to make it. And you could put your own braille abbreviations and whatever.
Yeah.
And there's yet another.
All right.
You thought there might be, right?
I thought there might be. Since you hadn't gotten off this subject, I assumed that there...
Well, I just got one of those voila things.
Yeah.
I haven't really used it much, but... Well, I just got it last week. But you can make a label, you know, stick it in there. And it's supposed to be washable. And you just sew that right in your thing and garment and... rub that wand up and down it, and that's supposed to tell. Now, I can't say that that really works, but it's supposed to.
If it did, that'd be pretty cool.
This voila thing is works sometimes, but it's hard to... I don't know why. It just doesn't work well. It doesn't seem to read the labels well.
Yeah.
Eventually, it will work, but it doesn't do as well as I think it ought to. Of course, now, if Dan... and then develop this camera phone thing. We got it made.
That'll be the answer.
That'll be absolutely the answer.
Oh, sure. Sure,
right.
It will.
Well, when they do that, then I'll buy a camera phone. But I know by the time they get it out, my camera phone would be the wrong model. So
probably. But anyway, they're supposedly working on that.
Yeah,
that
would be the thing. That's a really great idea.
I do, too.
So once it's in the once it's in your camera phone, it would speak to you, it would tell you.
Man, that'd open a whole new world of barcodes and finding out what something is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it is supposed to tell colors. Now, I have a color detector. I've got one of the first ones that came out, you know, when they were almost $600.
Yeah, really expensive. Huh?
Really expensive, and it's not particularly accurate. But let's see if this one works.
Black.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And these pants are black, so that's a good thing.
So it won't tell you like red for black then, or some really off.
Okay, it just did you hear that?
No, what did it say? What did it say?
Light gray is tinge of brown.
Light gray
tinge of brown.
Okay,
really?
Well, actually, this shirt that I
what was that your hair?
Huh?
I'm sorry. It was a joke,
no,
Susie.
It has tan. No, it was my shirt, and it has kind of a tan in it, and it also has red. Let's see what this is. Do you have the dark blue?
Yep.
Okay, that's in a quilt that's on this bed.
Well, that's pretty good.
That's a pretty good voice, too, to
it
be
does.
An older machine.
Dark turquoise with tones of gray.
Okay, that's dark turquoise with tones of gray. So, on a good day, it works really well.
Well, today's a good day because it's
really?
Working really well.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd say that this machine has mood swings, does it?
I think so. See, sometimes it won't work at all for me, and my son and daughter, they just think it's one of the... my son usually picks it up, and he's telling colors on everything. He can pick up a scarf or something with many colors, and he can get everything on it, so...
But you can't.
Okay, did you hear that?
No, what did it say?
Red.
Red. Mm-hmm.
Why does it make that nasty flatulent sound before it does anything?
Because that's to get your attention.
To get your attention?
To listen up. I don't know. I didn't make this. I just bought it.
Yeah.
But now, is it Cobalt or who is it that makes that, that talking tape measure that a lot of you all use?
I don't know. Cobalt? Is that
No,
is that
it's
it?
Not Cobalt, but it's something that starts with a C or K.
Yeah.
I don't know, but they have a color detector, too, that I think sells for like 80-something bucks.
Does it work as good as this one?
Well, some people say it works better.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, I'd give 80 bucks for a color.
Yeah,
that detector thing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't give 600 for one because
yeah.
I don't need to be that matched.
Yeah. But $80 is not.
I've had this one probably for about 6 years, and it works really well for where you want to make sure that, hose. Because sometimes I'll wear black hose with something or navy hose with something.
And they're all in a drawer, and you've got to look and see which two match.
Well, no, it works pretty good because I usually wear pantyhose, and that way my hose
yeah.
is matched. You know?
Yeah, okay.
That works better. Usually.
That's true.
Well, Susie.
What?
We're
going to
go.
Is this it?
Because we're about out of time. We got started late, and we got about 7 minutes, and we got a little something that Shaw wants to talk about after the break. So we're going to do that, but we'll count on you, I don't know, in a month or so, maybe?
Right.
How would that be?
Sounds good. And I didn't know what was ever decided, whether we'd do it once a month or once a year.
We'll do it
whatever.
Once a month, and we'll call you. I like Susie Homemaker. I think that's
yeah. That'll work.
Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe some folks will give us some ideas of things they would like.
Maybe problem that they're having that they can't come up with a solution to. Maybe we all put our heads together.
One lady, I think her name was, she goes the something dog, lap dog or something. I don't know. She's on the list. But
The dog mom?
Yeah. She did a real good description of ironing the other day.
Yeah, she did.
An excellent description.
Yeah.
So, listen, guys. Sorry I'm late, but I've been riding around Knoxville. So, you all have a great afternoon.
All right. We will, Susie. Thank you much, and we'll see you next time. More of the Blind Handyman Show. Hang on. Be right back. The whole point of the Blind Handyman Show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, and so we formed this, Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as blind like me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, a nice house and kids and a good job. But how am I going to do that? And I had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me Show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love.
This is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here is more of the show with Don Shaw.
But remember, all right. We've got an hour. We've got to talk for an hour. We don't have a guest, guys.
Next week's show. I'm sorry.
We're back?
Yeah, we're back. They need to tell us.
We're planning next week's show. We're going to go to Don Pat's house and do the show next week, so we won't have a guest on, so we got to kill an hour.
That's right. We can do it.
Can we kill an hour?
I mean, we can just not answer anybody's email in an hour like we do in 15 minutes. You know? That's true, too.
Now, we'll take lots
of list mail and depend on that. There's lots of... You know, the list, a blind handyman list is kind of changed. There's a lot of folks on there that have never been on there before, that we have must have a lot of new members.
Oh, yeah. Lots of new members posting things, doing projects.
Asking good questions. It's a neat list. If you want to talk about handyman stuff, it's the place to be.
It's the list to be on.
There are guys that know something about everything over there.
Yeah.
All right, Donald Shaw, what did you...
And talking about knowing about things, and this is something I don't know a lot about, but... You know, we've talked before on the show about that the compound miner box saw really is the one tool
that you got to have,
that you really need in your arsenal of tools. And I have one of these compound miner box saws. Don't use it much, maybe, you know, once every year or two even. But, man, when you need it, you need it, because I'm just not doing that many home projects anymore. But I did have a project that I was going to do last fall that I just didn't get done, and I decided, well, I'd do it this spring before it got too hot when we could have the house open, because this project is putting some baseboard down, and you know how that goes when you cut baseboard and trim. At least I, anyway, end up making a lot of cuts, sometimes maybe some additional cuts on each piece of trim, because I tend to cut things maybe a little bit long, because you can always make it shorter, cut off a little bit more, but you sure can't add to
it. You can't make it longer once you've done it.
So I made many trips back and forth cutting this trim, but it turned out well. But one thing I had to talk about was just like when you're cutting trim, baseboard, the miner box saw, man, it's the thing to have. It really is. It makes it so much easier. But even with that, you know, it's just thinking about every piece of trim you cut and making sure that you have the right angle for the right corner.
Because, you know, I don't care who you are or how smart you think you are, you'll cut that and go in there and go, well, hell, I've cut it backwards.
That's what I was going to say.
Every time I do 45s, I do at least one backwards.
Yep. And then you got to go and cut some, you know, and restart and cut it. And it seems like you think about it one way, and then when you get out to the saw, and it, especially if you turn the board either over or turn it around, it's so easy to get things just backwards.
Well, and that goes real tricky when, you know, I've seen guys do it that can set their saw to do a compound miter. You know, like you can have the saw tilted at a 45 degree, the whole motor, and then doing a 37.5 degree something else. And it that's like if you're going to put up crown molding and stuff, and you know what you're doing. I have trouble with angle. I know when I was doing the rafters on my garage, I actually cut several at several different angles and picked the closest one.
Yeah.
Because I did not know how to, with a framing square.
Yeah.
How to decide exactly what angle you needed where those rafter tails would be flat.
Yeah.
And so I just made several little samples and it worked. Finally, I finally got a good one and I stuck with it.
Especially crown molds. You think that through, and then inevitably you cut one of the damn things.
Yeah.
Backwards.
And even on these corners, like I was cutting, you know, you can't depend on each corner being exactly all the time square.
No.
And if one corner is a little bit off, and that's a problem I ran into on a couple of corners, is you still got a little gap. But the way I'm going to fix that problem is, you know, it's a small gap, so I'm going to buy some of this white to match the trim ribbon caulk and just put, you know, mold it like to the shape of the little of the crack that's in the corner.
Will that work?
And hopefully, you know, bigger than a crack that it is, it's going to. Hopefully, it's going to. I haven't done that part of the project yet. That's coming up.
I'd scoot it down and do the flat end for it. It looks like that'd be easier to me.
But hopefully that's going to fill in a little bit of gap that I've got in one of the corners. But overall, the project turned out good, and it just, but man, it'll keep you on your toes as far as just thinking about these angles and what to cut. But
well, it's like those picnic tables we built, you know, that there's an angle brace that goes down four of them. There's two on each end that go down from the kind of the center of the top, and then they go down past the bench, and they're actually the legs of the table.
Yeah.
And so that's got to be flat on the ground.
Yep.
And then the other end has to be flat against the top of the table. So those angles actually run in two different directions. And thinking that through, the first, once you do one, you're fine. Once you've got a pattern to go by, once you've done one and you get it to work,
right,
then you're okay. But doing the first one always... Now, does this angle run this way, or then you... it's just tricky.
And they've got to be perfect, or you won't get the flatness that you need on either end.
But so, if you do the same end, if you do the ends, the same angle on both ends, they're going to be flat. If you don't change the angle, if you sit one end on the floor, the top angle is going to be flat. If it's 30 degrees or 60 degrees or whatever it ends up being, if you do the same angle on both ends, but the angle has to run the right way. It can't run the other way, or it won't work.
Yeah.
That's why having those patterns. Did I hear theme music, Tommy?
Yes. You did.
I did. So I guess it's time to... It's all right, Donald. We're going to your house next week.
That's what I hear. Come on.
You're going to have a full hour of things to talk about.
That's right.
We're going to depend on you, sir.
All right. I'll be there.
We need your help. And then after that, we've got some kind of big news for you that I don't want to tell you about yet because we don't have it all quite firmed up, but we're very... very close. What we're very close to being able to do is doing the show live on a server where you can go hear it and we'll take phone calls and it'll be, as like Hallie said, like a real radio show. We're working on that.
That's right.
And I think I've got it, but these people's server's down and I don't want to announce this till they get it back up. And they're treating us like ACB Radio does. So, you know, that's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you,
yeah.
Tom Houston and yep. Don yep. Patterson and Don Shaw. Gentlemen, I don't know what I'd do without you. I couldn't. I'm Phil Parr, as you probably already know. I see, said the blind man, as he picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.